Welcome into the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan for the next hour. Eilish and Justin getting you set for some conference finals action in the NHL and the NBA tonight. We'll kick things off with a conversation with Kyle Bukauskas in a moment, and we'll wrap it up with Joe Cachero, our friend from The Score, because we've got some NBA action on tonight as well. Minnesota and OKC tip off at 8:30 on Sportsnet 360. So we've got some conference finals in both sports to preview tonight, and Blue Jays and the Padres are in town, and that's on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan at 7 o'clock.
So formal with your Cachero. Joey Cash on the NBA.
Well, you know, when he gets on with Joey Cash, but in case people tune in, they're like, wow, this is a really professional show. Then it goes off the rails a little bit.
Okay, that's fair.
And let's bring in your close personal friend, Kyle Bukauskas. Kyle, are you sick of talking to Justin yet, or things are good?
No, it's been a treat. But since when was your show considered professional, I have to know?
Well, only when you're on now. We really button it up here.
No, we've gone the other direction here.
Oh, that's good. Well, we're glad to have you on. I know you're covering the Eastern Conference Final, which kicks off Florida and Carolina. Game one tonight at 7:30 or 8 here on Sportsnet. Let's start with like the two different styles that are clashing tonight. I find it a really interesting like picture you can paint for us. You've got the, using air quotes for you that can't see me, like the boring style of the Carolina Hurricanes, and then the bit more ferocious, all over the place style of the Florida Panthers. Like, how do you see these two going head to head in another opportunity for one to make it to the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting that you say that. Like, and of course, like the narrative around the Hurricanes and the boring hockey. Like, weren't these guys not too long ago a bunch of jerks because they were trying to have too much fun?
Yes.
And now it's gone the other way. But I think, and both coaches, like both Paul Maurice and Rod Brind'Amour today talked about it. Like, they are very much more similar than they are different. Stylistically in how they play, the pace of their game, they're both very good at sticking to how they want to play for long, long stretches. I think that was a big driver behind why the Hurricanes were able to frustrate the number one seed in the East and knock them off after just five games. It's why the Panthers, after dropping two out of the gate to Toronto, were eventually able to turn the tides and blow the doors off them when it really counted at the end. So I think in that regard, you know, yeah, personnel-wise, there's maybe some differences. Do the Hurricanes, you know, have the same kind of nastiness as some of the guys on the other side do? You know, sure, there's some differences there, but that's a team that plays physical, that likes to forecheck a lot of the same way that the Panthers do, to get on the defense, to continue to have that whole mindset of, you know, over the course of a long series, the plan is to wear you down just enough so that, you know, there's enough chances that break their way to make a difference. You know, the one thing that's kind of a separator here going in is that, you know, I would say that the Panthers, you would have a little more game-breaking ability, like just because there's not going to be a ton of room to score. Like they've, as we've watched, they've got some guys that, you know, don't need a lot of room to make something happen there. And I think, you know, when they met 2 years ago, that came through because those were all four very, very close games, and the Panthers were on the right side of all four of them. The big difference, you know, for Carolina this year is that Andrei Svechnikov is healthy. And it's funny, I had a four lapse in my memory as Elliot and I were recording the podcast the other night, and we were talking about this series, and I said, yeah, you know, 2 years ago, you know, it was hard for the Hurricanes top guys to get going offensively. Like, Andrei Svechnikov wasn't able to get much going on. Well, the reason was because he was out with a torn ACL. That's why he couldn't be effective. So Hurricanes fans wasted no time reminding me of that. So anyway, it was like, I felt bad, but it was a good reminder of, oh yeah, that's why he was effective. But he's here. Like, he's healthy. He's got 8 goals in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think only Mikko Rantanen has more across the entire NHL at this point. So that's going to be, you know, a real critical piece here for Carolina that they didn't have against Florida 2 years ago at this stage.
Elliot normally there for fact checking, but apparently not, I suppose.
it was late at night, Justin, as you know, but like, no excuses. is, right? And hey, I'm responsible for what I say. Yeah, I'm certainly not pinning that on truth.
You know he's going to score tonight, and you're going to get tagged in a bunch of tweets, you know? Like, look who's there, Kyle.
Yeah, it's funny, I went up to him after the skate this morning, and I said, I've got to apologize to you for something. And he's like, what are you talking about? And so I explained what happened, and he just started laughing. He's like, oh my gosh, don't worry about it. And I said, you should, you know, be happy to know that your fan base, you know, very quickly came to your defense. He's like, that's awesome. So he was great about it. As you know, and Svechnikov is one of the great personalities in the sport here, too. So it's good to chat with him.
Always a good reminder that there are, in fact, those listening in Carolina and everywhere with 32 thoughts, which is a pretty cool thing. Anyway, let's go to, I don't know if this is like act two of a similar story that we just saw with Toronto and Florida. But, you know, Carolina's lack of round three wins is definitely a thing. I just wonder, to scale, because the scale is not the same as it is here in Toronto, how much that is agonized over, because, you know, we have a team in Carolina that has some tormenting going on, and we have a team in Florida who just seems to rule over all who are tormented. I guess, you know, putting aside, you know, how Florida will factor into it, like, how much is this agonized over for Carolina that they are in a position where, despite some success, they haven't been able to break through and break free, really, in the third round?
Yeah, I mean, is it agonized over? I'm not prepared to say that just yet, Justin. I mean, I think about, like, I did that series in 2019 against Boston, and that was, you know, a surprise run, as we all remember, and they just had nothing left by the time they got to that third round, and Boston was just on another level at that period of time. So it was like, okay, great run, great experience. We'll continue to build on that. 2 years ago, like, there was definitely the feeling of, okay, we've learned from that. We've gone through some other hard moments. You know, some of our core has gotten older. Like, Aho's been around a bit more. But as we mentioned, like, didn't have Svechnikov available. I think Pacioretty was with the team at that time. He was out. So, you know, you look at that, and it just didn't, again, so close all four games, didn't go their way. But like Seth Jarvis was 21 years old back then. He's a little bit older now too. So I think there's, you know, there's very much the understanding that, like you get to this stage again, there's no guarantee that you're going to be back. But you know, I think they believe that they're better. They believe that they're deeper with a healthy Frederik Andersen. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen how much of an impact he can have in these playoffs. But, you know, as Rod Bernmer kind of joked this morning, like, yeah, you know, we feel we're better. But you look at Florida, they were already a pretty darn good team as is. And then they add Seth Jones to the mix. They add Brad Marchand to the mix. And they both have looked fantastic as these playoffs have wore on here, too. So that's part of the challenge also for the Hurricanes that they've got to try to combat with, and the tormenting that, yes, the Panthers do love to inflict on any opponent that comes their way. But, you know, you look of all the years of the Hurricanes under Rod Brindamore as the head coach, you would think going into this that this one is kind of best equipped to give it their best shot at trying to get to a Stanley Cup final here. But, you know, as we all know, it just doesn't guarantee anything, especially against an opponent as good as Florida.
We're talking with Kyle Bukauskas, our NHL and Sportsnet reporter and co-host of 32 Thoughts, ahead of Florida-Carolina Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm glad you brought up Freddie Anderson and Bobrovsky, because, you know, Freddie's numbers have been really amazing in this playoff series. 9 games played, as like a 136 goals against and a 937 save percentage. And Bobrovsky on the other side had his big moments as well. Like, I think he was probably pretty instrumental in how Florida got through. Both of them are the Conn Smythe favorites for their teams heading into looking at the betting odds in terms of who would be the one to win that award. Like, who actually has the edge, I think, in controlling this series, because we've seen Bobrovsky have big moments. We've seen him win. Freddie Anderson, as Justin and I just talked about, like, if he's healthy, he can be really good, but there's always that question mark about, like, his longevity. When you look at these two and this goaltending duel, like, is there an edge you can give to maybe Bobrovsky because he's done it and he's won, or is Anderson able to maybe move that momentum that he's had throughout these two playoff series and start to really believe in himself?
Yeah, I think you said it right there, Ailish. Like, the fact that, you know, Anderson still has the question mark about his health, like, that's the separator, at least going in. Mm-hmm. So, like, as we approach 8 Eastern tonight, I think it's definitely edge Florida, because Bobrovsky has been so reliable. And as you say, like, you know, tough start against Toronto, 13 goals in 3 games, gave up 4 the remaining 4 games of that series. We have seen time and time again, he gets stronger as the series goes on. Anderson's been brilliant when he's been available. Mm-hmm. The thing is, he just hasn't always been available. So anytime there's contact around the crease of any kind of significance, you're kind of holding your breath and going, oh, hopefully this isn't another time where he's having to be removed and looking at missing a bit of time here. So I think the only way that Anderson, you know, can have an edge here at some point is if he goes out and earns it, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's been so good to this point. You know, some really critical saves in big time moments in that series against Washington last round. But you know, until you've actually shown that, you know, you're able to continue to hang in over the course of however long this series goes and go shot for shot with, you know, a guy that's going to the Hall of Fame and has won a Stanley Cup and a handful of Vezina trophies. You know, until that happens, I think you're looking at the incumbent here and saying, you know, that's where the edge lies in the goaltending department. But yeah, it cannot be overlooked how good Anderson has been so far in these playoffs. And I really thought, again, go back to 2 years ago, like he was the goalie also for Carolina back then. Like that was some of the best hockey I'd seen him play over the course of his career. It just, you know, it was so tight and just didn't go their way in the end. And now an opportunity for him to write a different ending to the story of this matchup.
Yeah, big test for Freddie, clearly, in this series. It's been not smooth sailing, but Carolina's done a really good job in front of him helping those numbers. But it'll be different with a bunch of Panthers roaming around in the blue paint, which I'm sure we can kind of count on here early on in this series. Kyle, in this market, a lot of talk about, you know, the Leafs buckling under pressure, all that stuff has been agonized over here lately. But on the flip side is the comfort that Florida seems to have in big moments. You saw them in the Stanley Cup final in Game 7 last year. You saw them in Game 7 just now against the Maple Leafs. Like, what strikes you when assessing that team and how it performs in the biggest of moments?
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole mentality that they have right when they roll into training camp. You know, certainly since Paul Maurice has come aboard, so much of what they talk about from the beginning and throughout the year, there's that undertone of how are you building your game for when we get to a Game 7. And there's that great clip that I know Kevin showed it in studio last round, and it makes its rounds on the internet from time to time too, of him on the bench last year when they were against Boston, pound their defense so that when we get to Game 7, they've got nothing left. Like, it's just, that is the microcosm of what the Panthers are about. And, you know, just talking to some people around them, it was such a calm, relaxed group on the flight up to Toronto for Game 7. You know, because, like, Brad Marchand put on a masterclass at the podium after that game there Sunday night.
Oh, yeah.
And just what he said about, like, that team blowing a 3-0 series lead in the Stanley Cup final. You've got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on the other side, and you find a way to win Game 7 at home. Like, is there a bigger gut check type game that you can play in your career than those Panthers did a season ago? So now when you get into these situations where, yeah, they're tight, yeah, there's pressure, yes, there's expectation to win and to not let things slip away. But in the grand scheme of things, I'm sure for a lot of them is like nothing compared to what they went through there and managing to survive it. So I think, you know, having that in their back pocket, and just the way that they go about things, not only when playoff time comes around, but from when they first get together in September for training camp, that whole mentality just sets them up for, you know, year after year we've seen where, you know, they've got one championship here to show for it to this point. But it's very clear that the hunger isn't satisfied just yet.
I'm so glad you brought up Marchand and the media conferences on Sunday night, because, like, I think, and naturally, I do want to pivot to a little bit about the Panthers and the Leafs, and obviously today was Leafs media day, but man, what a bunch of quotes, what a bunch of clips that came out from just the Panthers' mouths alone regarding the Maple Leafs and this market and the environment and how much better they could be if they didn't play there, and how Brad Marchand grew up as a Leafs fan. Like, it was full, like, if you were a reporter and you're standing in there, you're just like, thumbs are sending tweet after tweet and hit after hit. So just, like, you know, I don't think there's a reason behind why they're doing that, trying to deflect, trying to make the Leafs not make any changes. But didn't it feel very strange to see the way that the Panthers really took the Toronto atmosphere and media and fans and really kind of created their own, like, narrative a little bit after that, instead of being like, yeah, we won, like, we're going on the Eastern Conference Finals? It was about Toronto, really.
Yeah. Well, I think, like you've seen with Marchand as the years have gone on, like he's certainly gained more and more respect for the Leafs, even though he's beating
maybe
them
he wants
time
to be
and time
a Leaf,
again
Kyle.
In the playoffs. Well, I think, you know, Elliot was the one that put it out there. Mm. He is a believer in that becoming a reality. Which is fascinating, and if there was ever a time for him to help that narrative, it was, you know, what Marchand said after the game there on Sunday night. But, you know, a long way to go here just yet. I think, like, it was the conspiracy theorist in me is absolutely looking at, you know, the fact that they're like going, yeah, no, come on, leave that team together. Look how close they are, and just knowing they just the time after time again, if they run into them in the playoffs, going, we just get it to a game seven, you know, we'll be just fine here. So, I didn't expect it coming when you know, kind of the post game had started there. But, you know, whether it was Marchand or, you know, even Matthew Tkachuk, like he's tight with Matthews, right? So naturally, like there's that element as well. Like there's a friend there on the other side, like knowing as the captain and, oh my gosh, they just got blown out at home in a game seven and all the criticism and questioning that's going to come from it. And I think, you know, just for protecting a friend a little bit there as well. But also too, like is that not just kind of a bit of a recruiting tactic for the Panthers going like, oh yeah, like look at how tough that they have it up here. Not down in South Florida, not down in South Florida. And we're a team that's moving on and part of the remaining four to compete for a Stanley Cup there. That side of it, I can't help but wonder too.
It's high level on the ice, and it's high level off the ice, I think, too, for the Florida Panthers, as evidenced by all that we've heard since their series victory over the Maple Leafs. I know you're busy with round three things, but if you caught any of the Leafs today in their locker cleanup, anything you heard or did not hear that surprised you in any way?
I caught little snippets here, Justin. I'll be honest. I mean, you know, nothing what I saw that Mitch Marner said surprised me. Like he seemed in a reflective mode in the immediate aftermath of the game Sunday, like as if he was already of the mind that like this was it for him. And I don't think anything that I saw there here today suggested that it would be any feeling otherwise of that. Though, you know, there's still time to sort things out between player and team if there is a wish to do so. Little surprised that there wasn't more questions about, you know, Matthew's passenger comment. I know, like, Elliot was big time on that and going, like, you know, what could that possibly all mean? And just the shockwaves that will end up sending through the organization. So we'll see as time goes on here if, you know, what the captain had to say after, you know, falling in Game 7 in an incredible way, you know, where that ultimately goes from there. But, you know, beyond that, I think there was nothing else that. And then the little bit that I saw here amidst trying to get my mind wrapped around a brand new series here and a tight turnaround that otherwise jumped out. Anything for you too?
Oh, well, you know, there's a lot.
The Matthews injury stuff.
Yeah, I wish I knew more.
Maybe not surprising, but interesting.
I guess that's his prerogative, you know?
Yeah. And he's a private guy with that stuff as time's gone on, and that's totally fine. I think it's weird. Like, if for the longest time, you know, you're looking at it going, well, surely he's dealing with something. Surely he's dealing with something. Oh, we saw the morning skates, the practices on the off days that everybody else would be out there but him. And, you know, okay, it's rest. Didn't miss any games when it got to playoff time. But, you know, it felt like there was something going on there, even though they continued to use him in a, you know, in a lot of different situations. I think that one didn't catch me by total surprise. Mm-hmm. And so just, I mean, you did say the fact he doesn't think surgery is needed, right?
Yeah, that's the positive.
Yeah. So, yes, exactly. So we'll see if he gets anywhere close to, you know, a normal off season once things heal up.
Well, Kyle, we appreciate your time. I know it kicks back up for you tonight, but you're on the best weather series, 26 degrees today in Raleigh, and then it's 31 on your next stop. Like, you're gonna be nice and tanned up.
I know, like, are there two better cities to be in a cold arena for?
You got it. That's right.
So.
Get some sun.
So.
Thanks so much. Awesome. Kyle, enjoy the series.
Great. Thanks, gang. Thanks for having me.
That's Kyle Bukauskas, NHL and Sportsnet reporter, Coast 32 Thoughts. Headed to the Eastern Conference Finals, which kick off tonight. Florida and Carolina, puck drop at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet. 7:30 pregame show here on the network. Okay, we have about 4 minutes to discuss some of the things from Leafs Media Day and do some best bets, but we can also do this on the other side of the break too when we bring in Joey Cash, because we're going to go through some NBA stuff. But like we talked about it slightly there with Kyle. I think the things we learned at Media Day, you don't usually learn a lot, honestly. But I think the biggest bulletin points for me were that Matthew Knies really wants to stay, which is great. Matthew's definitely confirmed he was hurt all season, and this was bothering him in many ways. He hopes that he'll be fine by next season and that he doesn't need surgery, so that's a positive. Pacioretty said he didn't know if he wanted to play next year, which was surprising. Tavares wants to be a Leaf. We knew that as soon as the postgame on Game 7. Marner didn't take the time yet to figure it out yet. Of course, he's going to take some time. Stoller's concussion was from Bennett. And I think the lost our structure was the buzzy words with Berube. And like, what was the reason you lost? We lost our structure. Did I miss anything?
No, I don't think so. That's a pretty good summation, Cole's notes style, like all the important details. Like the rest is like how you felt about it, I suppose.
Yes.
Because it's like this whole process for the Maple Leafs, it seems every year of like, just don't say anything that's going to make news. Mm. And it felt like, yeah, they did a really good job again of not making too much news. I do think the most of the interesting stuff came out of Austin Matthews, clearly. Yeah, I mean, okay, so he makes the decision to not share what the injury is, which means now I think we can all just assume that he's healthy or assume that this is the new Austin Matthews who is maybe beset with something that could linger. We'll see how he looks to start next season. But the one thing about it is that, okay, rest and rehabilitation is the cure here for whatever ails him. There was a lot of time during the season to rest and rehabilitate.
Yeah.
And he played an international tournament and he pushed through the season. And he wasn't right, at least it seems, in the playoffs. So I think there can be some second guessing on how this is all dealt with. But again, if he doesn't look right next year, like this is not, oh, you know, he had surgery and everything's good. This is something that seems like, again, I don't want to say that it's going to come back. But if it does come back and it's still shrouded in secrecy, like that's just who Austin Matthews is now at that point. Because you haven't given us the information. I think you lose the benefit of the doubt in that sense.
I agree. I think that if you choose to be private about that, which is totally your option, like it better be 100% by next training camp. He said he got hurt in training camp and then it lingered all season long, and there's a lot of hockey and a lot of opportunities to sit, and he did go to Germany and then he did play in the Four Nations. So I think that's something that at least fans are picking apart a little bit this today after the media conference, and hopefully he can get it fully under control. Things we didn't learn at Media Day was that what actually happened to Austin Matthews. What Marner wants out of his next, he said he's got to sit down, talk to his wife, and figure all that out. It makes a lot of sense. Obviously, it's only May 20th. And then what's up with Shanahan and the organizational changes? Obviously, he didn't speak today, neither did Brad Trey Living. So we anticipate that to happen down the road. Maybe some changes there.
Yeah, that was kind of just the appetizer today, it seems. Mm-hmm. Like the real thing, the real decisions, the real conversation. I think the pointed questions and really like direction, chosen direction for the future will be decided throughout the week and I guess unveiled at some point. Before the weekend, I would imagine. I don't think it's going to linger too long, but it feels like major decisions are going to come and are maybe being made as we speak. And Luke Fox floating it on Kipper and Bourne that maybe Trey Living isn't guaranteed to come back is interesting. And again, that's not reporting anything. That's just like, hey, like let's not you know, just assume this is going to happen. But when we actually know what the dominoes are going to be, then you can really nitpick, break down, and figure out exactly what this organization is going to do and should do as they look to a new era.
Yeah, I think he should be back, Brad Trey Living. Maybe in a different role, though.
I think it'd be pretty dangerous because he's trying to put his imprint on the team, and it's not complete
yet. Like, dangerous
yet.
For you to bring it back or to not bring it back?
To not bring it back.
Yeah, okay.
And then you're just, like, you're chasing a moving target here, right? You're trying
you
to
have a little structure.
You're trying to create his team, and then you move off his ideas, and then you're chasing a new team. And if you're doing that, you're just running in circles, really.
Yeah. Not enough time to go through bets yet. We'll do that on the other side of the break. We still got a lot to go on our show. We'll tee up conference finals for the NBA, which kick off tonight. We've got Minnesota and OKC on Sportsnet 360 at 8:30. Sportsnet will have Florida and Carolina, which is also game one. We got the Blue Jays and the Padres on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590, the Fan. In about 30 minutes, we'll go through all of that on the other side of the break and hopefully get to some of the PWHL expansion news.
Oh, we're going to get
there. We touched on it
yesterday. I need to know exactly what happened here.
It took me about a day to get to the bottom of it.
Okay.
It's like, you know, that meme where the guy's got all the things on the board and he's trying to figure it out. It's kind of where we're at.
More Coles notes then?
Yes. I got it ready for you on the other side. All right. Joseph Cusciaro is going to join us on the other side of the break. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan conference finals kicking off in both the NHL and the NBA. Minnesota and OKC with tonight's games. Sportsnet 360 at 8:30. Justin's team. All of your teams.
Yeah.
You're going to have to pick one.
Oh, it's the Thunder.
Okay.
It's the Thunder.
Well, they're in action.
But if we're doing happiness hedges, boy, are we set up nicely.
Yeah, we. Well, you are. For sure.
Yeah, although Denver had to spook me into a couple of bad decisions.
Oh, did they?
We'll just put it that
way.
That's
okay. You got lots of time to write those decisions. And help us tee it up tonight and the rest of the conference finals is our friend Joey Cash, Joe Cusciaro of This Score, lead Raps and NBA reporter. How's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing, Ailish, Cuthbert?
We're good, you know. We're moving our attention from the Leafs on to other things, other bigger and better things. Are you feeling the energy in the city a little down as of the last couple days?
I mean, my energy's down, yeah. I guess the silver lining is that I don't have anything distracting me from the conference finals now and what is actually my job, but good Lord, is it getting harder to do this every year now?
Yeah, every year,
getting our hopes up. And
yeah.
Then,
I know.
Did you believe a little bit more given that the New York Knicks were doing the thing a little bit?
Man, I'm not kidding. I really did. I really did. I was messaging multiple people, friends, coworkers, whatever, saying that, you know, I've for long, many years, talked about the parallels between the Knicks and the Leafs, Knicks fans and Leafs fans, the droughts and what have you, you know, each kind of being the mecca of their sports. And I really thought that the way everything was lining up was like, oh, my God. They're both going to end conference finals droughts by beating the defending champions in their respective leagues. Like, things are lining up. There are some parallels here. And lo and behold, even Knicks fans get nice things before Leafs fans.
Yeah. You know what? We just didn't have a Pope on our side. I think that's what kind of happened there with the Knicks. They've got like some Holy Spirits helping them out. The Leafs, we haven't found that connection yet. With the Pope. Okay, let's talk about, I just want to like zoom out just for a second before we get into the specific matchups, because this is seven championship franchises in 7 years for the NBA, which is, you know, not necessarily the way it's always gone. We've got the Knicks, the Thunder, the T-Wolves, the Pacers. It's kind of like it's always like the out with the old, in with the new, and maybe we're seeing the opportunity for a new dynasty. Like, is this, I don't like to say the word good for basketball, but is this like maybe reinvigorating? Is this exciting for fans that are like, hey, I want to cheer for a team that's getting the crack at an opportunity to maybe create their own new legacy, create a new dynasty instead of seeing maybe the same old every time?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And the answer is that it's super exciting for the NBA. I think it's very invigorating for the league. And I actually just wrote about this yesterday. And, you know, the title of the piece was Welcome to the NBA's Age of Parity. So seven different champions in 7 years, first time it's ever happened in NBA history. And just this level of parity in general, like, okay, that's unprecedented. So you can say the NBA's never seen this level of parity before. But even not talking about just the championship winner, I looked at, even if you just look at like the conference finalists the last 5 years, even just comparing it to the 5 years before that. So in the last 5 years, every seed has been represented at least once in the NBA's conference finals, 1 through 8. Five sub 50 win teams have made the conference finals in the last 5 years. And like, you know, for people that follow the NBA, they know for the longest time, just because of the nature of basketball and the way that the best players can dominate the game in basketball in ways they just can't in other sports, you know, because of the rules and the way the games are and whatever, you just didn't usually see that balance and that parity. Like, you know, fans can talk themselves into whatever they want, but for the most part, it was always, you know, a poorly kept secret in the NBA that you don't really have a shot when you get to the playoffs unless you're one of the elite, elite teams. So like 2016 to 2020, only top five seeds made the conference finals, and 18 of the 20 conference finalists were top three seeds. the 5 years since, like I said, every seed has made it. We've had a quarter of the conference finalists being sub 50 win teams. Like, the NBA is finally at a point where fans can realistically talk themselves into going into the playoffs. Hey, if I think my team is just, they don't have to be historically great, just good. If I think they're well built, I can now actually believe, hey, if they just get in, they have a chance. And in our lifetimes, the NBA fans have never been able to talk themselves like that.
Yeah, it feels like there's fewer shortcuts, right? Like, you can't make mistakes and just be like, oh, we got LeBron James and everything's fine. Like, and again, that's a reflection on, like, the level of superstar. But we just saw Nikola Jokic, who is that guy right now, have, you know, mistakes basically befall him, right? Like, there was just not enough around the best player in the world. And again, we could get into the argument MVP Shea versus Jokic. But if Jokic is on, if Jokic has the team around him, it just feels like it should be Jokic at this point, because of the failures of the Denver Nuggets from a roster standpoint, it wasn't enough just to have Jokic. It was close, though, and that's where I want to segue into the Thunder. Does it feel like Shea and company cleared an important hurdle, like they earned their stripes with a hard-fought victory against the Nuggets, where they had to figure out a way to deal with potentially the biggest problem the NBA has?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was a lot of growing up in that series for the Thunder. You know, like, this is a team that won 68 games. They had the best point differential ever, and, you know, were the championship favorites, or at least the second after Boston, but the favorites to get to the finals in the West. So it's weird to talk about them like this, but people also have to remember, this was also the youngest team in the playoff field and the second least experienced by playoff games. Like, they are so far ahead of schedule in terms of their regular season success compared to their experience. And so there are a lot of boxes they still had to check. And I think they checked a few of them in that series. Were one, you know, they really figured out how to come up with various solutions to a giant problem like Jokic. And two, they really showed some poise, in the line of fire under adversity. Like, the way they blew game one of that second round series, they came close to going down 3-1 at one point. They've came very close to going back to Denver down 3-2. Like, they got some steely wins, and then the way they handled their business in game seven, I thought, was just a very important kind of growing up series for them to prove that, like, yeah, we're young, but we're every bit as good as we looked in the regular season. We're here and we're ready.
I wonder how different or difficult this challenge with Anthony Edwards is going to be, though, because, like, I watched that guy, and it's like he thrives on beating the legends. You know, in the last calendar year, he beats Durant, Jokic, LeBron, Luka, Curry, and he's, like, setting his sights on Shea. Like, I feel like he just is, like, some sort of, like, villain that actually gets fueled by beating the greatest, and he wants to be the greatest. Like, he sees this as another hurdle. How big of a problem is he going to be in this series for OKC? And, like, you know, this head-to-head, that's probably what I'm most excited to see, is the two superstars dueling it out to get to the final.
Yeah, I think it's going to be super exciting because you got two of, like, the younger kind of coming slash future faces of the league in Shea and Ant. And, yeah, I mean, to your point about Edwards, this guy is just – I know we talk about a lot of athletes like this, but I think it gets thrown around too often. But with Anthony Edwards, he really is just the ultimate gamer.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean he's always going to be great, or, you know, he's never going to make mistakes. But you never have to worry about whether that guy is ready for the moment or can meet the moment. Like, he is going to play his butt off. He's going to rise to the occasion, and he 100% embraces these moments and these games. And that's why the Timberwolves are where they are. You know, they had never won series in back-to-back years until now. They've made the conference finals more times in the last 2 years than they had in the previous, like, 32 years of their existence, whatever it was. It's because of Ant. It's just because of the way he changes things and the presence about him that he has. And, yeah, obviously they have a good supporting cast. But I do think the Thunder will be up to the challenge. They're an incredible defensive team. They were the best defense all year. You know, there's a lot of, like, league-adjusted metrics, which essentially say the Thunder had the best defense of the last half decade. And they just don't have a lot of weak – they don't have any weak points, really, defensively in their rotation. And so they have so many different guys that can give Ant problems, you know, whether it's a Lu Dort, whether it's a Caruso. They just go down and down that list. Even Shea is no pushover on the perimeter. Like, Ant, you know, is a scary guy to take on in a playoff series, and Minnesota's really good. but I think the Thunder have the answers defensively.
Yeah, certainly not like necessarily a less complex challenge, but like just from a physicality standpoint, there's just more that they can throw at Edwards with their talented defenders. Like they have a lot of talented defenders, but only a couple guys could actually be viable against a guy like Nikola Jokic, and that changes exactly. Here. With Anthony Edwards. The big question, I guess, for the Thunder coming into the playoffs and just in general was, okay, they take away Shea, are the other guys going to be able to hurt them? Are the other guys going to be able to lead them to victories? It was hit or miss, it seems, with Jalen Williams. Hit or miss, it seemed, like with Chet Holmgren at times in at least the series versus Denver. But Jalen Williams certainly came through when it mattered the most in Game 7. But how would you evaluate what the guys who need to step up for Shea have done so far in these playoffs and whether or not they've convinced you that, yeah, they're going to be fine in these big moments?
I wouldn't say they've convinced me yet. I mean, Jalen Williams has been pretty up and down in the playoffs. And I think if we're being honest, he's been overall underwhelming compared to what he is as a player consistently in the regular season. I think that Game 7 performance was obviously huge for him. And even when we talked about the way this team has kind of cleared some hurdles and met the moment, you know, if you're a Thunder fan or rooting on Shea and the Thunder, you're probably hoping that Jalen Williams himself kind of cleared a hurdle in that Game 7 and that he's just who he is now the rest of the way. But no, it's concerning for sure because they haven't looked quite like themselves consistently. And as I was mentioning, they are the youngest team in the playoff field, let alone now the conference final field. So, you know, I'm not ready to bank on the fact that Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren will consistently look like what a number two and a number three on a championship team will.
We're talking with Joey Cash, our friend of the Score, lead Raps and NBA reporter. As a reminder, we've got Minnesota OKC on Sportsnet 360 tonight, game one at 8:30. Okay, let's move to the Pacers and the Knicks. Like, I was a part of the Bing Bong era just for a little bit there when Bing Bong was big, I was in. And now I'm getting reeled back into the Knicks. We just talked about the parallels of the Leafs. Maybe that's why I like watching the Knicks fan base and how absurd it can be and exciting, and like how Timothy Chalamet is like hanging out of limos. Like, it's really exciting. What would it mean if they advance through and they get to an NBA final? Like, how huge would that be for the NBA, for that fan base, and how maybe jealous could we be here in Toronto?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all of the above. Like, it would be massive for that fan base. It'd be massive for the NBA. They've made the finals a lot more recently than the Leafs have, for example, if we're using that comparison. Like, they made the finals in 99, they lost. They lost in, I believe it was 94 in the finals. But what that team means to that market and to people in New York, and you see it, like, if you see the way they celebrated just making the conference finals and then just try to double that, right? Like, yeah. Let alone if they make the finals, but if they were to actually win, I just can't even fathom what the celebration around MSG will be like, what the celebration in that city will be like. And, you know, coming into the playoffs, I wouldn't have really said it was possible, because as good as the Knicks were, I just thought there were so many better teams in the field. But at this point, you're in the conference finals. They've got home court advantage in the East final. And again, they wouldn't be favored against either of OKC or Minnesota. But like, you look at the talent on that team, how complete they are. They're a two-way team. If they can take care of a series where they have home court advantage, they'll put themselves in a situation where they're four wins away. And at that point, anything can happen.
What's like the most important thing for this series? I mean, the Pacers have definitely establish themselves, I think, as the deeper team. The Knicks run, you know, a pretty short bench, and they run their guys into the ground, as we know, with Tom Thibodeau. But like, if the Pacers are going to win this series, how does it happen? Like, what does it look like if Indiana upsets maybe the NBA or the NBA world at large and knocks out the Knicks in round three?
So for one, I'll say I don't think it would be that shocking. Like, I would lean Knicks, they're the better team, but I really think we're splitting hairs. Like, I think these teams are that close. I think what people have to realize is that the Pacers, once Tyrese Halliburton got healthy and looked like himself around the midpoint of this season, they were like the third or fourth best team in the NBA from January through the end of the season. And they've looked like that team again in the playoffs. Like, this is a really good team. Tyrese Halliburton has a claim as the best player in this series, although Jalen Brunson has something to say about that. But I'd say the thing that might determine this series is between Halliburton and Brunson, they are two great players, offensive stars, who are often picked on defensively. Now, both of them have really upped their game defensively, or at least have upped their compete level and their effort in the playoffs. And so when opposing teams have gone after them and tried to hunt them in pick and rolls or really, you know, target them in mismatches, they've actually both really held their own. And so one thing I'll be looking at in this series and could determine the series is, does that continue, or does one of these guys, who traditionally they're both defensive liabilities, does one of them end up looking like the liability we know they both are? Because if one of those guys falters on that end and becomes the target that the opposing teams are going to look for, that could spell the end for their team.
Is Rick Carlisle the most slept on coach in the NBA?
Man, he might be back to being that. And the funny thing is that there was a time years ago when everyone used to refer to him as like the warlock of the NBA, because you could give him five guys and he would construct a pretty good offense and no one would understand how. And then it felt like he kind of lost his shine for a bit. You know, there was a lot of like playoff disappointments on the teams he was coaching. And, you know, him and Tyrese Halliburton found each other, and man, what a match made in heaven they've been. And I think Halliburton deserves a lot of credit for kind of resuscitating and revitalizing Rick Carlisle's career. But yeah, I mean, he's probably the most underappreciated coach again, which is kind of crazy given how long ago he was that before.
A lot of Raptors fans probably listening and interested to see Pascal Siakam in a big spot. I mean, I'm sure people have been tuning in, but maybe you're just going to tune in for the Eastern Conference Finals and be like, oh, Pascal Siakam's doing quite well for himself. OG Anunoby, I guess, on the other side as well. Just from a Raptors standpoint, I guess, and a Raptors adjacent standpoint, those two guys are obviously going to be instrumental in this series. But who's in the perfect spot? Like, has this worked out beautifully for both of them, or is one of them in a position where, yeah, like the landing spot ended up being the exact thing they needed to prolong their career in a really positive way?
Honestly, you know, I'm not trying to take the cop-out answer here, but I think it's both. I think both equally found great spots for themselves. Like Pascal playing in Indiana with Halliburton, who I already mentioned, this offensive genius. You know, Pascal doesn't have to be the number one option, but he's still talented enough and gets the ball enough to be like a great secondary player on offense, allows him to kind of be that all-around defender we saw in his prime in Toronto. And you know, is put in a great spot and put in really good positions by playing with one of the best point guards in the world in Halliburton. So I think that's been great. And then OG, I mean, he ends up on a Knicks team that within a year after getting him is just up their talent level so much that, you know, on another level from Pascal, because he was never quite the offensive engine Siakam was, but OG just doesn't have to worry about much else other than like being the defensive great that he is and the big wing stopper. You know, whoever the best opposing perimeter player is on the other team or big on the other team, OG's got them, and he can knock down his open shots. And it's just kind of this perfect, I don't want to say easy, because it's obviously not an easy role to fill, but he makes it look easy because it's just the perfect situation and role for him. It's the role he's always thrived in. And yeah, I don't think he could have honestly landed in a better place.
Okay, last one for you, and you can answer this as like a fan or a content creator, writer. What's the best final matchup that you could have and the worst final matchup that you could have?
Okay, I think Thunder-Knicks from the standpoint of, look, the Thunder, like I said, they're this 68-win juggernaut that if they were any other team, you'd be like, oh my God, this is like they're a 68-win juggernaut that's the youngest team in the playoffs, with all their guys either on their rookie scale contracts or soon to be extension eligible. And you can look at that and be like, can this be the start of a dynasty? And to have that young rising juggernaut go up against the Knicks of all teams and New York trying to end that title drought, I think would be an incredible series for content, for fans. But there's a part of me that kind of knows it would be so fascinating to see Knicks Wolves after the Karl Anthony Towns, Julius Randle, Dante DiVincenzo trade, if, you know, after that trade was made on the eve of training camp, 8.5 months later, those two teams are squaring off in the finals. Like, the storylines would write themselves, and the victor would be so vindicated by that deal, and the loser, like, you know, imagine that happens and the Wolves beat the Knicks. Like, what is Karl Anthony Towns feeling after that, right? Or vice versa. Like, what do Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo feel if they have to be on the other side while they're watching the Knicks end that drought? And, you know, they in Randall's case, more likely, has to kind of think like, I guess I was the problem, like I was the odd man out. I think that would be a really fascinating one. So sorry to Pacers fans, because I guess they're the only ones that I said don't have an interesting claim here.
I think we're spoiled either way. We'll find something. Yeah. I know you will. And we'll be looking for it at the Score. We appreciate your time tonight, Joey. And we'll chat soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and go Leafs go, I guess.
We'll talk about that in September. How about that?
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks so
much. I need the break.
Yeah, I agree. That's Joe Cacciaro of the Score, lead Raps and NBA reporter, helping us get set for the conference finals kicking off tonight. Okay, you have some best bets regarding the conference finals, so why don't we go to that?
Sure. In both. Oh, not both. Both sports, at least, with the conference finals starting tonight. I also like, just to throw in freebie, Indiana Pacers. I already mentioned them at like plus 350-ish. I still like them plus 140 to win the series against the Knicks. I think they're going to repeat last year, which is a win in Game 7 at Madison Square Garden. Okay, Hurricanes. A lot of talk, obviously, about their lack of success in Round 3. I think there's going to be a motivated group in Raleigh tonight, and I think the Florida Panthers clearly, like, hey, you just got over a hurdle. Maybe there's like a natural relaxation. So I like the Hurricanes to win Game 1, but lose the series. I think the Florida Panthers are going to do what they always do, wear on a team, win late. Hurricanes, if they win Game 1 tonight, I think they're going to lose the series. Plus 325 is the number for that.
Okay.
In the same strategy, the Wolves have been resting for a little bit. The Thunder, clearly just a couple nights ago, couple afternoons ago, I suppose, went through a grueling Game 7. I think it's a good spot for the Wolves to get a game, but lose the series, plus 450. So Wolves to win Game 1 and lose the series, plus 450. The Timber Puppies is right. Let's save the P-Dub ones, and you can go with your Eastern Conference Final.
Okay, yeah, I'll go to one that actually was inspired by my our conversation with Kyle. I was doing some research on Svechnikov, because last time they were in this conference final, he didn't play. And it was funny that Kyle brought that up today. He had the torn ACL, and now he has only trailing Rantanen for goals scored during the first two rounds.
Quietly having a brilliant playoff.
Yes. He scored 8 goals. I like him to lead the Eastern Conference final matchup, just this one, all of them, in goals, 8-1. I just don't see the Florida Panthers, as we talked about, like, they don't have somebody that's scoring all of their goals. Like, they could get one from Bennett, one from Marshawn. I mean, Kachuk probably not ever going to score again. Watch, he'll score now that I said that. But, like, they're more spread out, whereas Fetch is really leading that team in terms of offensive goal production. So I found that little one at 8-1 just to lead the series. Doesn't mean he has to win. He can just score the most goals, because I think the Florida's a bit more spread out. And I also like tonight in the PWHL, we're kicking off the final, the championship for the Walter Cup, starts tonight. I like Ottawa to get the win first. They're hosting Minnesota, of course. First two games are in Ottawa. Then they go to Minnesota, and then they would have a game 5, if necessary, in Ottawa. I like them to get the win to kick things off at home tonight.
I got a futures bet for the P-Dub. Gwyneth Phillips is the goaltender for the Ottawa Charge. She is not the favorite to win the Alana Kloss MVP award, but I think she should be. She's given up 6 goals in nearly 16 playoff periods so far. Like, the goals against average is like 1.15.
It's
She's got unbelievable numbers. And if they win the series, the numbers should probably be pretty good still.
Yeah.
She's plus 500 right now. I don't know if that's 1-1, but the Charge are kind of like the Panthers in that they're by committee. There's no one really running away with any scoring title or a scoring lead on that team. So their goaltender should clearly be the front runner. I would have that, like, way closer to their series price, and it's not. So plus 500, Gwyneth Phillips, keep it going.
Yeah, she's done amazing, stepping in when their goaltender, Mashmeyer, got injured earlier, and good for her.
Can she come back, Mashmeyer? That would be the only problem.
No, I think it's Gwyneth Phillips all the way, definitely. Okay, quickly, I'm going to sparse notes this. I've tried yesterday, but we ran out of time. I have a minute and a half. Okay, so PWHL expansion has been confirmed. How the expansion draft is going to work is each team that's already in the league can lose up to 4 players. They're going to be able to protect 3 players, and then they have the ability to add one more once 2 people have been taken from their team. So if you're Montreal, Poulin, Stacey, Debian protected, and then you might lose Ambrose, you might lose Gardner, you might lose, like, anyone else. It's going to be a little toxic. For example, the Scepters might lose. They might be able to protect Fast, Turnbull, Malte, Nurse, Hannah Miller, Daryl Watts, like those are a lot of names.
Those are six names.
So, you have to pick three. It's going to be very spicy. Anyway, so there's a period of time coming up where you'll be able to communicate if you're Seattle and Vancouver. You'll get to sign five players in this signing period. Then you'll go through this draft process. You'll end up with 12, and then you'll normally go into the draft. My main comment on this is that it's way different than what the WNBA does, where they protect six players.
Yeah.
This is going to be losing real all-stars right away from you.
Immediate futures bets on Seattle and Vancouver, given that they're going to get a ton of great players.
They should be easily like in the top. They might be some of the best teams already, which I don't mind.
It sounds like the existing teams are going to get decimated.
They might get decimated.
Okay.
Anyway. Oh, that's it for us tonight, folks. Ran out of time. We will see you tomorrow. Have a great night with the conference finals kicking off.